The information I will be presenting is for educational purposes and not a substitute for medical care. This show is not intended to diagnose, treat, or prescribe. The information described today is not a substitute for your own intuition or consultation with a duly licensed practitioner. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Sam Byrne. I'd like to welcome you to 2020 iTalk. It is Wednesday, and here in Tasuki, New Mexico, I'm broadcasting from my geodesic dome. I hope you all come and visit me sometime. It's just a beautiful, spectacular place. So today's show is a serious topic. It's going to be on autism. And this is a growing epidemic in our children. And I want to start off by reading a story. This is actually from my book, Without Ritalin, A Natural Approach to ADD. So here it goes. Vincent was in grade school and apparently hating it. His parents, teachers, and counselors had no doubt that he was highly intelligent, but observed that he did not conform. He couldn't sit at his desk without wiggling. He had difficulty reading, writing, and taking tests. He didn't seem to be able to follow directions or complete his homework. He preferred to draw his rather bizarre pictures. Also, Vincent sometimes made inappropriate noises and gestures in the classroom. He asked a lot of questions and was thought to be a disruptive influence. He had too much energy and just didn't fit in. At a parent-teacher conference, Vincent's teacher asked, "Have you thought about putting Vincent on Ritalin?" His parents soon found themselves in a psychiatrist's office where Vincent was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, Asperger's, and mild autism. The drug of choice, Ritalin, was prescribed for him. Ritalin made Vincent quiet and subdued. He lost his manic edge. If he drew at all, his drawings were rather dull. He didn't appear to be as intelligent, inquisitive, or demanding, but his parents, teachers, and counselors agreed that it was a small price to pay for peace in the classroom. In short, Vincent became another unremarkable, average, docile child. Imagine what the world would have lost if Vincent's last name were Van Gogh. So this epidemic that's going on is really putting a lot of pressure on parents, school systems, insurance companies. I'll give you a statistic here. Based on the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, this was in 2010, autism occurs in 1 in 69 children in the United States. And we have seen a 30% increase in autism from 2006 to 2008. Boys are 4 to 5 times more likely than girls to be diagnosed with autism. The U.S. government has ignored autism until recently, and in 2006, they came out with a public law bill known as the Combating Autism Act. So one of the questions that I get is the diagnosis of autism, is this diagnosis meant for medical or educational purposes? So from my point of view, autism has no psychological indicators. The autism diagnosis occurs only when an individual exhibits certain specific behavioral symptoms. There can be a wide range of problems, vision-related, speech-language, auditory, cognitive, attentional problems, social problems. So what do we do? What's the answer? Well, it's been an inquiry of mine for over 30 years, and today I'm going to talk about 7 strategies that can help transform autism. So if any parents or teachers are listening, I start off with the first strategy as the what if. And I call the what if the new normal. So it's like this. We have these amazing children that are really different in terms of fitting into the so-called normal situation, whether it's in school or social. And the what if is a meditation or a visualization on how would we like it to be. So one thought would be that our schools would be less overcrowded, that we'd have more one-on-one time between teacher and student, that the ratio wouldn't be so large. That in terms of the electronic morass that we live in, that we could remove some of the intensity and stress around using electronics, around learning how to read at a younger age, pressuring our kids to academically strive earlier and earlier in their life. Another what if is, instead of putting our child in 4 or 5 or 6 activities, maybe just one activity outside of school. And then let's take a look at the birthing industrial complex. A lot of the kids that I see who've been diagnosed along the autism ADD spectrum have had very difficult beginnings, whether in the womb, gestating, certainly the birth, with all the inducing, the drugs like Pitocin, C-section, breech, forceps delivery. These are very early imprints that begin to affect the brain, sensory motor development, and digestive absorption. And then, of course, we have the bonding and attachment right after birth. Maybe there's a way that we can support these kids coming into this world in a more loving, nurturing place where the rhythm and the flow of their birth is more in tune with the natural rhythms of mom and dad and not of the doctor and the hospital. And then let's take a look at vaccinations. How many vaccinations do we really need to give at a young age? All the toxicities, I call them neurotoxicities, whether they're external from the environment or internal, heavy metal toxicities, that we could just wipe those away. When our child eats good, healthy food, digests, spends a lot of time in nature, does a lot of art, creativity, movement, and we don't put the pressure on them at such a young age. That's the what if. That's the first strategy. The second strategy is what's going on in the gut, our immune system, and our cellular health. This is a biggie. You know, several years ago, I had a mentor. His name was Dr. Al Sutton, and he practiced in Miami, Florida. He was also a professor at Berry College, and he taught therapists and professionals about development and vision therapy. And he was one of my main mentors when I was in my career as a young practitioner. Dr. Sutton did a study at the Miami Heart Institute, where he took two groups of kids with attention problems, learning problems, probably some autistic kids, split them into two. One group, he did a biochemical test and gave them nutritional supplements. And the other group, he didn't do anything to them in terms of supporting nutrition. And he administered his visual learning thinking program, some of the things that I do. And he found that the group that received the nutritional support did far better in the therapies that they were offered than the group that didn't get any nutritional support. So the moral of the story is it starts in cellular health. And if our cells are not producing enough energy, or we have toxicities in our body, that's going to affect our dietary absorption. And affecting our dietary absorption, it's going to create an impediment in our brain function. So it starts with improving what's going on in the gut. There was a book written many years ago by a Dr. Gershon called The Second Brain. And he talked about the importance of gut health, stomach health, and that many of the hormones and chemicals that are produced in the stomach are mirrored and produced in the brain. Now, what are some reasons why we might have dietary absorption problems? Well, one factor that's very important has to do with the antibiotic use, especially when we're really young. A lot of the kids that I see in the autistic community have had multiple ear infections. And there's a couple of problems with that in terms of the treatment modality. Number one, the main treatment that's still being used to treat ear infections is rounds of antibiotics, which actually destroys the good bacteria in the gut, which is important for dietary absorption. Number two, when we have constant fluid in our ears at a very young age, we start to shut down our hearing and our auditory, our ability to get information in through our ears. And that begins to interfere with our speech development. In my methods, I have found that if there are multiple ear infections, number one, there's probably some kind of a dairy allergy. And number two, doing things like homeopathy, essential oils, craniosacral therapy can actually reverse ear infections and get rid of the fluid without the side effects of antibiotics. So this whole gut situation is very tied into our immune system. In fact, if we don't have a healthy gut and we're not absorbing very well, then we are going to start to have immune system problems. And this is also another factor in kids struggling. Now, the immune system is a little trickier in that we have to employ many different factors. And, you know, a lot of parents will email me or call me and they'll say, okay, what do I need to give my child? What do I need to feed my child? What do I need to give them? And my first response is we have to figure out and find out what's going on in the biochemistry. Because without a lab test, we're really just throwing darts on a wall. And, you know, we can read things on the internet and we can talk to friends and, you know, we can kind of put something together. But my view is, as a scientist, as a doctor, that laboratory tests are very helpful in determining specifically what are our deficits and what do we need to come into a homeodynamic state. Balance is not a static situation. Balance is constantly moving, constantly changing. And you know, I've had people over the years say, I take the same vitamins, I eat the same food, And in part of our evolution, we need to recognize that our body needs and craves variety. And so if we start taking a certain vitamin, mineral, whatever we're going to be doing, we want to make sure we're coupling that with what's going on in a lab test. And then to be fluid to say, okay, I'm balanced now, this is working. And then we got to add things in terms of maybe changing things up after a certain period of time. Okay, the third strategy that's very important, and I mentioned this at the top, is the early preverbal imprints, which I call gestation, birth, and bonding. There's some really interesting professionals out there in the cranial osteopathy world, in the chiropractic world, that offer something called perinatal and prenatal therapy. You could Google it. And basically, these folks are educating all of us on the very important and early influences that affect the fetus in early gestation. You know, just as an example, in my world, I ask a lot of questions. I ask the moms a lot of questions. You know, what was happening in utero with your child? And what was happening with you? What was happening with your husband, the father? Because basically, the gestating chamber is the external energy field and the world of the fetus. And so based on what the mother's diet, exposure to toxins, stress, it's going to have a very strong influence on that fetus, because that's a very sensitive time in our development. And whatever mom is feeling or dad is feeling, that prenatal creature is going to feel it at least 10 times, if not more. So one of the things that we talk about is, how much movement does mom get in gestation? Because the more movement she gets, the more it stimulates the fetus's vestibular system, which is the inner ear. It's kind of part of our GPS orientation system that starts developing. And our visual system, because when we're floating in the fluid in that dark womb, we're stimulating our peripheral vision, which is also very important later on for depth perception, our ability to balance and orient, our memory. Moms that are afraid of having another miscarriage, who have to have a lot of bed rest, there's a tendency for those kids to have more sensory motor problems later, just as an example. And we can all talk about the neurotoxins. And the neurotoxins, I categorize them in four basic groups. Heavy metals, environmental toxicities, this would be from manufacturing plastics and consumer products. Mycotoxins, mold. Mold is seen to be even more of a toxicity these days. And endo and exotoxins, created by pathogenic microbes in the body. Now again, if we have a healthy immune system, and we have good dietary absorption, then we have enough energy in the cell to push metabolic waste away from accumulation on the cellular level. But this gestation, birth, and bonding are critically important in the early development. And if there are problems here, one of the best ways that I have found to work with this imbalance or this problem is through craniosacral therapy. And for some of you, if you don't know what craniosacral therapy is, it's basically a light touch where the practitioner is trained to subtly feel the brain rhythm, the fluid, the cerebral spinal fluid pumping up and down the spinal cord, sacrum spinal cord, cervical spine, up into the brain, that creates a nutrient flow into the brain and into the sensory systems. There's a lot to it in terms of craniosacral therapy, and there are many different kinds of therapists. But this therapy is really wonderful because it penetrates the defenses that a lot of these kids have because they're stuck in a survival response. I see a lot of kids that have been adopted, and this is a really difficult place where I see a lot of disconnect in helping these young children transition to whatever was going on at their birth, whether they were abandoned, whether they were neglected. But if you have a child out there that's been adopted, there's going to be some connecting the dots and filling in the holes. And going to a developmental specialist with this kind of global scope is, in my opinion, the best way to help these kids. The next strategy that I'm going to bring into it, this is number four, is structural and brain integration. You know, it's very interesting about the brain. In a lot of ways, we don't know a lot about it. And yet, neuroscientists have been studying it for years. And in terms of the communication and the hemispheres of the brain, we start off with our reptilian centers, which are in the brainstem, and they kind of control our arousal ability, our ability to be responsive to external stimuli. And also, the reptilian brain is the part of our brain where our survival response comes in. There's a wonderful neuroscientist who's come up with a theory called the polyvagal theory. His name is Stephen Porges. I highly recommend you Google him. Dr. Porges, in his polyvagal theory, talks about the development of the autonomic nervous system from the reptilian beginnings to the mammalian phase and eventually to the empathic state. And in the brainstem, this is part of our reptilian response that we all go through. And there's certain movement patterns that actually dictate and control are being controlled by the brainstem. But eventually, we want to grow out of the brainstem so we can move into the higher centers of the brain, the cerebellum, which is more conscious motor control, and then eventually into the prefrontal cortex, our cortical function, our cognitive function. But if we've had any kind of head trauma, brain injury, toxicity, it is going to affect the brain circulation and our brain development. And the brain integration is a really important piece to this. And of course, through the eyes, I test how the eyes and the brain work together. In fact, I define vision as how the eye, brain, and body sync up. When you go to an eye doctor, most eye doctors base their examination just on reading the 20/20 eye chart at distance. That's not vision. That is not vision. That is sight. That's eyesight. It's a static measurement. Vision is how the two hemispheres of the brain communicate with the eyes and how that then dictates in moving the body through the world, in our orientation, our balance, our spatial relationships, and so on. So we have the right brain and the left brain connected by the corpus callosum. We have the frontal brain and the back part of the brain. We have the upper brain upstairs and the downstairs brain. And all those are mirrored by how well we're able to move our body. The right side of the body, the left side of the body, the upper part of the body, the lower part of the body, the front of the body, and the back of the body. And there are different therapies that I administer that actually can create more of the brain integrated by working with different movement patterns through the body. That's part of my method in helping these kids. Okay, number five, in terms of the seven strategies, reflexes, vision, motor, speech, auditory. So once we hit age two, age three in our development, we're now in a phase where hopefully we've done a lot of exploration with our body, with movement, being on our tummy, being on our back, rolling, hopping, balancing, climbing. And so in terms of these reflexes, we call them the primitive survival reflexes. And these are movement patterns that begin in utero. And the purpose, one purpose of the reflexes is to help the newborn adjust to being out of the birth canal. A lot of times when we've had a difficult birth or we've had stress in our bonded attachment, these reflexes get frozen in our motor patterns. So I see a lot of autistic school-age children who are still in their primitive reflex movements, their reptilian responses. And when we ask them to learn to read or write, their sensory motor systems are not ready for it. And it takes a very adept teacher, psychologist, doctor, to recognize we can't put pressure on these kids to do these higher brain functions because their motor skills are not ready for it. So, of course, their behaviors are going to show everything from, you know, hyperactivity, frustration, impulsivity, withdrawal. In the next segment, I can go into some of the more behavioral characteristics, but suffice to say that in looking at these kids, it's very important to do it through a developmental lens. Where is this child based in their chronological age versus their performance age? And if you look through that lens, that's going to explain a lot about their behavior and about the load that they're under, the stress load, when they're being asked to learn in school. So it starts with relearning how to integrate these primitive reflexes, which relaxes the brainstem. And then as we move forward in our brain, we then can move into more of the delicate micro-movement, gross motor, fine motor control that our body needs. I remember one of my mentors saying one time that learning in school starts with being able to learn how to master your body control. And I agree with that. I think that the more we're able to master our body coordination, and it starts with the big muscles first, then we can use our eyes, use our ears, copy from the board. And we can do that effortlessly, but it starts with the reflexes and the gross motor coordination. I also put speech, language, auditory here. Oral motor control, being able to control our tongue, our mouth, our speaking. That's also a specific muscle oral motor control skill. So the hierarchy is primitive reflexes, gross motor, fine motor in terms of our sensory development. Then the next step can go into more cognitive processing, which takes me to number six in the seven strategies, behavior and academics. You know, one of my early learning experiences, I mentioned this on the last show, was when I was training at the Gazelle Institute in New Haven, Connecticut. And I spoke about in New Haven how I learned the art of observation. That when kids would come into my waiting room and I'd have puzzles and games, my evaluation started when I would observe how they played games and what their focus was like, what their motor control was like. And a lot of behavioral responses that we see are symptoms. And one of my beefs is that we in the medical field want to control symptoms, control behaviors through superficial means. And the easy approach is through pharmaceuticals. And I'm here to say that in terms of behaviors, these are hidden messages. These are signals that your child is saying to you, I need help. Take the pressure off. Help me with my biochemistry. Help me remove some of my trauma and toxicity. And then I don't have to exhibit this behavior as a release mechanism from saying, you know, I can't do all these things. And of course, this couples in with academics and the press for what we're talking about in terms of doing well in school. Okay, number seven. What happens to these kids when they become adults? Is there hope for them in terms of independence? This is something that I have wrestled with. And again, in our current scheme of things, we have to recognize that there's more and more kids in this autistic to Asperger's to ADD spectrum. And as we have more of these kids become adults, how can we support them to have a better life? And I don't have any answers right now. I work with a lot of different professionals in this area, but this is really an interesting question. And I think it really starts with, number one, learning how to master your health. And that's one of my main principles, is how to become better at self-regulation, how to know what your body needs in terms of its food and diet, what kind of support you need, and to find your passion in your life that you want to give to the world, the gift that you give to people. So the phone lines are open. I'm going to give you the toll-free number, 1-888-627-6008. And if you have a question, either on this topic or any topic, give us a call. I'll be happy to answer your questions for you.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand.
Welcome back, Dr. Sam Byrne, 2020 iTalk. It's great to have you today. We've been talking about autism and the autism ADD spectrum. And it's a subject that, you know, I've been exploring for the last 30 years with my practice. And, you know, it's a really interesting dilemma that, you know, kids in school, especially the special education classes, are growing so much, leaps and bounds. And I think parents get really, really confused with all the information out there. And so I want to talk a little bit about nutrition and our diet, and that seems to be, I get a lot of questions about that, and it seems to be a big issue. So I'm going to talk a little bit about this, and if we have any questions, The toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. First thing I want to say is that, you know, our lifestyles today are such that we are just in a high-speed culture. And I do believe that the electronics, with its own speediness, we have to accommodate our rhythm to the electronics world, that I think this is a major problem. And I also think that the electromagnetic pollution from all the wireless that's around, the electromagnetic toxicity that we're inundated with, is a big problem for these kids, and it's for everybody as well. I also think that another issue that comes up is in the culture, especially in mainstream, publications, magazines, and TV shows, that we're told that being fat is a big problem. We're kind of fat phobic. And yet, the obesity in this country, in the US, has never been higher. So it's a very confusing message. And, you know, I've studied nutrition a long time. And it is a real science, and it requires us to really take a look at what are our food choices and what drives our, you know, our impulses. Last year, I was leading a retreat at the Esalen Institute in California, and I had a group of about 24 young people. When I say young people, 25 to 35, and we meet every day for a month. It's a month-long retreat that I lead on health and wellness. And one night we got together and we just had a conversation about diet, nutrition, what do we eat, what don't we eat. And it was interesting to hear their point of view. And there are so many different perspectives on it. And, you know, I'm not a cookbook person. One size does not fit all. And, you know, as an example, one of the things that we were talking about is the fact that, you know, basing our decisions on food, on incomplete information, whether it's internally based on emotions or whether it's based on some myths that we've read about on the internet. Like, for example, one myth is you shouldn't eat salt. It causes high blood pressure. Or another myth is that, you know, eggs are not a good nutritional food, that it can cause cholesterol. Actually, one of my teachers, Dr. Hazel Parcells, Dr. Parcells was a naturopath and a chiropractor, and she was one of my mentors when I first moved to New Mexico, and I met her when she was 103, and she was just starting a retreat center outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico. She was just starting a retreat center at 103, and I met her, and I studied with her for about 2.5 years. She used to say that salt was very important in terms of cellular absorption, and not all salt is created equal in terms of, you know, mineral salts and bamboo salt. That's a very, very good salt to eat, Celtic sea salt. So it depends on the quality, but salt is a very important part of our diet. It also supports our adrenals, among many other things. And in terms of eggs, eggs actually are really good, a really great protein, and also very important for our macula, which is the center part of our retina, back to eye health. But it kind of depends. Again, I have a lot of patients who are vegan or vegetarian. There are all kinds of sources that you can use in lieu of protein, animal protein, and I respect that. But I think you have to be aware of the large corporations that are kind of driving the food incentives and these highly processed carbohydrate, sugary cereals and artificial ingredients are just not cutting it. I think highly processed foods, I think GMO foods are all things that we need to avoid. And one of the big components now that we've been looking at has to do with gluten. And more people are recognizing that gluten, which is actually a protein, and it's we find it in so many different things, baked goods, pasta, grain products. And basically what gluten can do is it reduces our ability to absorb our food. It creates a more inflammatory response in the body. And it also creates some autoimmune problems that can show up, like celiac disease and IBS syndromes. And certainly with kids who have, you know, the ADHD, autism, I think the allergens, if we can remove those external allergens like gluten, wheat, dairy, processed foods, artificial ingredients, that in itself can do wonders in terms of improving behavior and, you know, improving dietary absorption. Because what happens when we have a gluten sensitivity is that we can develop something called a leaky gut syndrome. And this has to do with a hyperpermeability where we're not absorbing our foods very well. And of course, this is going to be translated all over the body, especially the brain. And it's one of the big issues that I really counsel parents about when they're, you know, when they're trying to figure out what to feed their children. So again, I want to give the phone number out, 1-888-627-6008. It's a toll-free number. If you want to give me a call, I'm happy to answer any of your questions. So my approach in terms of what do we eat is probably recommending a low-carbohydrate diet. And in terms of, you know, different things to recommend, you know, the enzymes and probiotics are really important. And there's another piece to the puzzle, which I want to bring up. And this was actually developed by a colleague of mine who's an endocrinologist in Southern Virginia. And he's done a lot of study with celiac disease and dietary absorption. And he talks about something called the leaky gut, where the tight junctions that kind of connect at the intestinal level are not tight at all. And you can eat the best probiotics, enzymes, but unless you repair these tight junctions, that you don't have a container for proper dietary absorption. And he's got a wonderful website. I'm going to give it to you. It's called Restore for Life. And the product is called Restore. And I would recommend that you check it out. I think it's kind of gives some answers on why people who do a lot of enzymes and probiotics still suffer a lot of dietary absorption problems. And it's something that I've been using over the last 3 months, and I'm finding that it's another adjunct. Again, I'm not into the magic bullet theory. I don't think there's one particular component. It's very complicated, and you have to be kind of like a CSI detective to figure out, okay, how do we work with these kids, and what are you know, the starting points, and where do we plug in? So I'm going to take another break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about some new information that I've discovered about the autism ADD coverage. So this is 2020 iTalk. We'll be right back. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here. You can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way. Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Sam Byrne, 2020 iTalk. We're talking about the autism ADD spectrum today. And I want to speak briefly about one more topic that's very near and dear to my heart, and that has to do with the topic of vaccinations. And this is a subject that is very important. And as a parent, I recommend that you really educate yourself on the pros and cons, because there's a lot of gray area with vaccinations. And there's a lot of media back and forth. And of course, in the AMA and, you know, the traditional medical people, vaccinations are required. And yet, you know, I think the jury is out in terms of these vaccinations and the vaccination schedule. I think one of the questions that you want to ask yourself is, you know, do I want to give all these vaccinations at once? Can we spread them out? And this takes some negotiation with your doctor. I think it's important to take a look at a child's personal vaccination reaction. And in terms of, you know, what has happened in the personal family or the history, if there have been any convulsions or neurological disorders, any allergies, because I think looking at, you know, the family dynamic, that can give you a roadmap in terms of, well, what's happening with the vaccination possibilities with my child. So it's important to make an informed decision. And in looking at the child's birth history, to look at the genetic background, because it's the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of, you know, what is the thing that's going to push the child over the edge? Because the key thing with vaccinations is it really helping or hurting the immune system? Now, one of the techniques that I like to use when we do vaccinations is I'll apply either homeopathy or essential oils in addition to the vaccinations. And in doing that, the essential oils specifically, there's certain ones like black cumin, patchouli, laurel leaf, cedarwood atlas, Mexican lime, that can actually neutralize the ill effects both on a toxicity level and a chemical level. So you still get, you know, if you want to call it benefits of the vaccination, but you're using natural remedies to counteract the toxicity and the reaction level. Again, this becomes tricky because, you know, you have to really know your child. But I'll give you a case history. Recently, I was contacted by a parent from New Jersey, and they had an autistic child who's now 7 years old and was suffering a condition called exudative retinitis, which in the retina, what that means is the retina is very inflamed. And basically the mother did some detective work, and she found out that this particular syndrome started happening very early in the child's life when the child was administered the vaccinations all at once. And they have done some biochemical testing to confirm this correlation. And I have to say, over the years, I've seen a lot of connection between vaccination and vaccinations and toxicities. So it's definitely a topic. The jury is out on it. And I would say you really need to educate yourself and find yourself a holistic doctor that can go to bat for you so that you can minimize the vaccinations and minimize the problems that go on. So we're winding down near the end of the show, and I wanted to give you some announcements. I'm actually going to be giving a lecture in Phoenix, Arizona, and it's going to be next Friday. That's September 19th. There's an autism conference, and if you go to my website, www.drsamburn.com, in the events section, you'll see that I'm giving two lectures on these particular topics. So if you live in the Arizona area, you should come to that. I'm also doing my yearly dolphin swim health retreat, and that'll be held October 19th to the 23rd, 2015, in Kona, Hawaii, seeing eye to eye. So we'll be doing some vision work and revisioning and swimming with the dolphins. We still have a few spaces left. If you want to come on that, we'd love to have you. I'll also be in Vancouver, British Columbia, September 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th giving a seminar and doing private sessions there. Again, you can get the information from my website. And my new book is out, Taking It In, talking about digestion for adults and children. Just came in. So if you want a copy of that, contact me either at visionwellness@cybermesa.com or my office number, 505-469-4949. If you have any questions about the show, any questions about the information, feel free to send us an email. I think this is a topic that isn't going to go away. It's only going to get more and more press as we move forward, and to recognize these young beings, these children, that if we can meet them where they are, we meet them where they are and start there, and we don't have a very heavy agenda, that we can actually navigate and help them move forward in their emotional, spiritual, psychological, and physical journey. Remember, the diagnosis of autism, Asperger's, ADD is only a label. And I offer you this, that you don't have to live out the doctor's diagnosis. If you don't like the school you're in, find a school that meets your child's needs better, if you can afford it, if you can do that, and surround yourself with like-minded professionals that are on the same wavelength and page as you and your child. And if you do that, you're going to get much better results than trying to go to somebody who doesn't match your belief systems and your philosophy. So many times I've had parents come to me after they've been to so many different doctors, and the frustration that's built up because the people they go to just don't share the same possibilities, the same holistic ideas that I'm presenting. And there are a lot of us out there that are presenting these ideas for sure. So I want to thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Please visit drsamburn.com/events to learn more about his workshops, webinars, and professional trainings. To order Dr. Burn's new book, Taking It In, please contact visionwellness@cybermesa.com or call us at 505-469-4949. The Burn Method is a trademark system, and no part of this show can be copied or used without the consent of Dr. Sam Burn.